team tonight, both us here in our little home studios, and I'm sure the lads on their way back from the new den, because the final score, it's put us into the fifth round of the Emirates FA Cup. It finished Millwall 0, Bristol City 3, all three strikers scoring goals, albeit one had a little bit of a lucky deflection. But let's go to the panel, which is Dave Fevs and Mark. I don't know what's happened to Ian. I'm sure he'll come in later, but I think it was Ian at halftime saying we were being overrun a bit in midfield, but I'm sure he can expand on that. Guys, as we do, let's have a quick quick overview of the game before we dive into the detail. You first, Dave, and welcome back after your day off in the week.
Midweek rotation.
Yeah, midweek rotation.
Rotation.
I thought it was a game that we, for 20 minutes, it was quite a scrappy affair, and we looked like we didn't have much composure. But I thought we grew into the game, and eventually I think we ran out very deserved winners. 3-0 might have been perhaps one goal to the good, but it was a really good professional performance. I thought we made a average Millwall side look far less than average. So yeah, really, really pleased tonight, and some good steady performances out there.
Excellent. And Mark, what were your thoughts? As Dave alluded to, first half was a bit not great. I mean, I've got lots of chances for Millwall there, but we ran out winners, and deserved as well, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's all about confidence. I mean, for some reason, I think the first 20, 25 minutes, we seemed a bit overawed by Millwall. We were losing the ball easily in midfield. I think Taylor Moore played a pass back, which was drifted wide of O'Leary. I think Mariappa was robbed, and they just got cross after cross into the box, and some great saves by Frank. But in the end, clinical finishing, 90,000 banked, and the chance of a first FA Cup quarter-final for 47 years after that wonderful one win at Leeds in February 1974. Yes, I am a history nerd, but that's a bit of a millstone we like to overcome, I think, Dave.
Yeah, no, I think you're right there. I mean, look, let's go back to Dave and look at the lineup. Six changes. Millwall made eight. What were your thoughts when you saw that lineup? Maybe Masengo not being in it was perhaps the only surprise.
Yeah, I thought, bearing in mind he'd done the pre-match interview yesterday, that's normally a good indication of someone going to be in the starting. I don't know what's happened. I seem to remember Kieran Agard was on a good run, did the interview and didn't play again for us. So, can't always read too much into that. But, yeah, no, I think it showed we were taking the game seriously. But also thinking about Tuesday night against Huddersfield by resting people like Alfie Mawson and also, Chris Martin
Nash
on the bench. Yeah,
Nash.
So a pretty strong lineup.
And was it a 4-4-2 or a 4-3-3?
No, stuck with the 4-4-2. I think, the beauty of Semenyo and Palmer, which was probably not the beauty on Wednesday against Norwich, is the fact they drift around off the wings and quite often play narrow. And we saw that with Semenyo's goal, that he was the one latching on to a Wales pass through the centre of the pitch to score. So, I don't think it was the side I would have picked, because I think there were, too many changes to be confident of what he was going to select. But, it was a decent team selection that gave us every chance of going there and getting the win, which we did.
We did, and we got the win. I'll come to you, Mark, to talk about the goal in a minute. But I say early doors, we were under the cosh a little bit, because it was Mason Bennett, who I thought had a reasonably good game for them. Left foot shot save, corner, Bradshaw headed shot save. Mariap and Palmer, a couple of times they lost the ball, letting Millwall break down the left. Parrott put in a good shot. But O'Leary, who I thought was great, was equal to it. And he saved a powerful shot from Leonard as well. But then, Mark, the goal, Agent Fielding, Frankie Fielding was in the building, without a doubt, And it was a nice little build-up, wasn't it? Yeah, I mean, Viner to Dijou and Frankie, well, take us through the goal.
Well, I think Ian said this at half-time, and I've got to agree with him. I mean, the pass by Viner probably was a little bit too heavy, which meant that it left a bit for Pham to do. And Frankie charging off his line fouled Pham, dived at his feet, and he went head over heels just to the right of the six-yard box. And it was a powerful shot into the bottom right-hand corner, Fielding dived the right way, but it was, you know, hard and true, and that's how he hits every single penalty. I only know him miss one. I think up at Swansea last season when we lost 1-0, he missed a penalty, but he normally hits them hard in the corners. No Panenka chips for him, so I think we're well served there. But yeah, it was our first shot on target after 31 minutes with a little bit of a bombardment. But then we just found our confidence. And I think this is what strikes me about City, is we've got some good players. When we show our confidence, we play some nice one-touch football. And that's what happened later. But I'll let you go on, because I don't want to spoil it.
Well, Ian's now in the room. Ian, we'll come to you. We're in the middle of talking about a match action, but I'll let you have your view on the opening goal. I mean, it was a clear penalty and expertly dispatched away by Pham, wasn't it? Is that 4 goals in his last 6 games, something like that?
Well, I'll take your word for the goals in the games, but one thing for sure, he's in terms of a striker, he's got to be the first name on the team sheet every week. I think the formation, and I said this before the game, I think that formation works against anybody pretty much outside the top 6 or 8 because it gives us a bit more attacking threat. That formation looks good. I don't think we get away with it. I hope I'm wrong, but I don't think we get away with it against the sides in the top 6 of the Championship. But nothing much wrong with that win. And great to see Semenya get a goal, because his shooting's been absolutely shocking lately. So
yeah,
another goal.
Yeah, we'll come on to that in a minute. I mean, after we'd scored, they almost got an equaliser straight away. I think Tommy Rowe headed off the line after Bradshaw's header, and then Mason Bennett.
55.
He had a shot saved a couple of minutes after that, their fifth corner, and Diju showing how good he is at the back of the defence. Again, just before half time, Naki Wells had a free kick well saved, and then Wells crossed for Semenyo, who shanked it a bit just before the break. I mean, Dave, that was, City came back. They could have gone in 1-1, or it could have been 2-0, because it was quite an end-to-end game, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was quite a decent game to watch, actually. You know, half time, I was thinking, yeah, this is better from us. It wasn't perfect, but I think, you know, you go to Millwall, the first thing you got to do is you've not got to give them any encouragement. And we spent 20 minutes where we didn't play particularly well, and they had a few kind of scrappy chances, didn't they? But we grew into the game, and you know, 25 minutes in, we started to pass the ball a little bit. We started to get that little bit of movement, and I thought Casey Palmer, I don't think he had a fantastic game today, but for me, the quality of his touch and technique, and especially under pressure from a man on, and I always call it a lively pitch. It was pretty bare in places, wasn't it? The ball was bounced around, and you could tell he was the player with that bit of quality when the ball came into him.
Yeah.
And I thought people started to get confidence in playing the ball to him, and I think he
looked confident as well, didn't he? Because he didn't lose a ball in possession.
He didn't overplay, Dave. No. He just popped balls off, and there were a couple of little balls in that kind of latter 15 minutes of the first half where he got the ball, got a man really tight to him, and he just kind of did one of those little 10-yard reverse passes that goes 5 yards forward for Viner and Backinson to stride on, and then we were through their midfield. And that's not what we've had against teams.
That's what we've been crying out for.
That was really encouraging. Yeah.
Start of the second half, we got into it good and proper. 2 promising attacks, and then Viner, he set up Semenyo shot into the side netting, and then straight down the other end. It was end to end. It was a lively game. Pierce, who we had on loan about 5 years ago, 4 years ago, I'm sure people remember that. He ran unchallenged, and Max did another fine save, tipping the ball over the top. Confident handling from Max all day today, I thought, bar one effort that he flapped at, which he didn't get. But the second goal, Mark, I didn't really watch. Well, I'm sorry, I didn't watch the build up, but it was about 20 passes before Palmer set up Semenyo, was fouled, and then Wells took the free kick. Was it one of those 20 pass builds up, a bit like we got at Blackburn a few years ago?
Backwards and forwards, prizing them open. But the crossfield pass by Casey was tremendous. I mean, it reminded me a little bit of the crossfield pass to Josh Brownhill in the final minute against Charlton. He just hits these great blind passes when he doesn't have to think. You know, he's like a golfer who can get it right near the hole. His passes are that good. And Antoine took it on his chest. and he's direct. And he'll just draw fouls all day. He drew fouls in the first half, and it was in good range for either Tommy. It looked like it favoured Tommy Robe because it was on the right-hand side for a left-footer. But Naki had got that shot, you know, right on the post, which had been beaten away by Frank Field in the first half, and he got a slice of luck. But when he deserved it, because you know, when you hit a free kick that well, that's what happens. Tough,
yeah.
It's tough, yeah. SHIT, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's good for us to get that lucky break. I mean, Ian, after 62 minutes, Semenyo did get the ball in the net after more good passing from City, as both Dave and Mark have said. We were knocking it around well. Offside then, and I think it might have been Naki that was offside, but the goal, 71 minutes, Ian, that third goal that made it an unassailable lead, even for City. Yeah, take us through that third goal and Semenyo's, not his goal, first goal in the league, but his second goal in cup competition. How did you see that? It was a great build-up and a great finish, wasn't it?
Well, the point that stood out to me was Naki Wells playing as a striker. Yeah. Gets the ball back to goal, hooks a fantastic crossfield pass to Semenyo. Defender can't get it. The minute Semenyo gets that ball and he's got grass to run into, you're in trouble because he's quick and he's powerful. So you've got two choices. You can trip him up or you can chase after him. And they went for option two and they couldn't catch him. And what I liked is he running through, he had plenty of time to think about what he was going to do with the ball, but it was a cracking finish with his left foot. So I hope that's the first of many, because one of those guys you look at and you think sometimes he's right-footed. Then you think, no, hang on a minute, he might be left-footed. So I think he's two-footed. And then he obviously did my trademark celebration, the backflip.
Yeah, I know, he's a fair bit of body there, isn't he, Semenyo? You know, you sort of see it going up, you know, the ground would have shuddered underneath that. But it's interesting what you say there, Ian, about, you know, they had two options to trip him or let him go or try and hope that he loses it, because both of those free kicks outside the box, it was Semenyo's powerful run that was being fouled. And if he adds goal scoring to that powerful running, he's going to be another, I'll call it, saleable asset, because we'll come on to all that later on. But
if he has a season when he does that, he'll be gone. Yeah. I'm telling you that now, because somebody will come in. I don't think he's a striker, not yet anyway. I think he's a wide player. And I'm talking championship up. I think he'd be a great striker for the Rovers. But that, you know, and I may have to, I'll have a look at the what my trademark says on that celebration, but that was always my celebration. And as far as I'm concerned, he's infringed the copyright, and I'm going to have to go down the training room.
I think it was 6.0 for a technical merit and artistic impression you used to get, didn't you, Ian, for that on the ice?
Most of the time, the best bit and the thing that really used to bring the house down is when I used to land on my head.
Could you still do it, though, Ian? Could you still do that?
Oh, yeah. Dave.
Is that why you're short, Ian?
Yeah. I mean, it took 3 inches off me. I keep landing on my head, but the lads loved it, and it was good for team spirit, so I kept doing it.
All right. Since we're talking about goal celebrations, and I didn't play at all, and I don't think you did either, Mark, but Dave, you're an accomplished footballer on the local scene, allegedly, in days gone by. Did you have a trademark celebration? Was it the raised fist of Alan Shearer or drinking of, what's his name, Paul Merson? How did you
say? I had two. Okay, two celebrations. That one, because I scored two goals. I scored a few more than that. When I played for Brislington, they used to call me the policeman because when I scored, and not that I scored tons for them, I just used to walk purposely back with a long stride and my arms going alongside me, and they sort of used to call me the policeman. But my if I was playing like Sunday stuff or something like that and having a bit more of a laugh, then I used to like to do the Carreca aeroplane and, you know, wheel away with my arms. But you know, as a kid, I think I might have done a Mick Shannon once, but probably dislocated my shoulder, so I didn't do that anymore.
Well, look, I mean, the substitutions when they came, I wrote down, and somebody else put on OTIB. Actually, what's that going on in the background?
Oh, I think they're trying to tunnel out of dorm three past the Germans. It's my next door neighbours who've just moved in.
Oh dear, oh dear. You never let us down. Cheltenham are drawing 0-0 against Man City in first half injury time as we speak. But there we go. Oh, 75 minutes. The substitutes started. Yeah, I wrote down why Martin then. Yeah, and Masengo. Well, ignore Martin. Masengo came on again. It was only a cameo, but he looked impressive. As did, is it Awura Edwards, Dave? I mean, those substitutions. Why bring Martin on? You know, he didn't need to do that at 3-0, did we? Really?
And the only logical thing I can think is play. You need to keep his leg. And you know, if he'd have done a pre-match warm-up and all the stuff in readiness for the game today and then not play, he might be one of those who might get stiff back out of his legs. And that's the only thing I could think of. And so, you know, it was a strange one. I'd have had Sam Bell on there and, you know, give him 15 minutes. I was desperate to see him for longer than 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Do you know what we got coming up now in the next 31 days?
10 matches.
10 matches, yeah, in 31 days. Because that fifth round tie is actually a midweek tie. So it's between Cardiff and the Cardiff and Watford games, I think. So right. Yeah, it's going to be wall to wall games for February, two in January. We've got eight in February now. So just gone
talking
from
about
hard
going
hard to hellish.
Yeah, talking about going through the to the next round. I mean, Sheffield United found a little bit of form, but that's a place that City can go and have a chance, I would say. But let's go through the marks for the chaps. I'll give mine, and if you violently disagree with any of them, say higher or lower. So it's a bit like play your cards, right? So
do we get a Brucey bonus?
Yeah, because again, I forgot to say the last thing that one of Millwall's best sequences of the game when Bennett crossed the ball and Thompson, powerful header saved by Max. And as I say, Bennett and Thompson were taken off after that, so that was a bit bizarre. So here we go. Max O'Leary, 7. Shout it out. You know, not individually, just go and I'll take a view on that. Max O'Leary, 7.
8.
8 for
eight,
me as well.
8. All right, so we give it. Right. Okay, Mariappa, 7.
6.
6.
6.
Kala, 7.
8.
7. 7.
More, 6.
6.
7.
6.
Row, 7.
6.
Agreed.
6.
Agreed.
In the middle, Viner, 7.
7.
Yeah.
Back in
7.
Seven.
Back in
7.
Back in 7.
Yeah.
7.
Yeah, 7. Disagreed. Yeah, agreed. Palmer, 8.
7.
7.
Close to an 8, but 7.
Don't go overboard, David.
So I was being a bit optimistic compared to
I know.
Semenyo, 8.
8.
8.
8. Yeah, I'm talking to June Barnes. It's time for rap music.
Yeah. Dijou, 7.
6.
7.
7.
There you go. Wells, 7.
7. 8. 7.
Well,
that's probably Ian's giving him an extra mark there because he looked interested for the first time in a while. But there we go. All right. Well, look, that's done the game. I mean, the bloody commentators on there. He was calling him Tyler Moore in the first half. Yeah. Again, Millwall, no home wins in 8. So, you know, maybe
9 now, I think, isn't it?
9 after, if you include that game, yeah. After us. And that was our 6th win in the last 13 games. No draws, 7 defeats, shutouts in 5. Last draw we had was a 0-0 against Watford. I mean, let's look forward very briefly to the 2 games coming up now in the week ahead, which are Huddersfield Tuesday and Wayne Rooney's Derby County, putting QPR in further trouble. They did with a 1-0 win today at Kazim Stadium or whatever it's called these days. I'm saying 4 points is a minimum requirement for those 2 games. I mean, Ian, 4 points for you, nothing to be really afraid of, but Derby seem to have turned the corner a bit, don't they?
Well, without wishing to put the mockers on it, Huddersfield are where their bogey side So, yeah, I'd say 4 points is a minimum. But Derby are down the bottom. We've got a decent record there. And the first game under Wayne, I think they lost when he was appointed full-time manager. They lost, so I think we need to go up there. I think we may need to go back to the 3-5-2 against them, although, as I said, against the not-so-good sides, the 4-4-2 can and will work. So, yeah, I think I'd be disappointed if we got less than 4 points. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Okay. Mark, same for you. 4 points, a win and a draw.
Yeah, I don't see any reason why we can't get six. I think we definitely should beat Huddersfield if we want to go anywhere. I don't see us doing anything this season, but if we did want to go anywhere, the good thing is Derby will try and play football against us and give us the space to play in. So, you know, we've got a very good chance of hitting them on a counter-attack with our new secret weapon, Antoine Semenyo. I don't know if any of you have seen him. He does score goals, apparently.
Yeah, apparently. And good goals as well. Dave, I mean, 4 points. I mean, we're due a draw just on the law of averages, really, aren't we? I mean, typical City, it would probably be a draw and a win if it was going to be that way round. But, you know, 4 points, is that minimum just to keep the hope of sixth slot on the horizon?
It would probably gain us some ground on the teams above us if we get 4 points from six games, because, you know, undoubtedly some of those teams will lose one game amongst them. So, yeah, if we want to close that gap a little bit and keep in touch, then you've got to win one, draw one. But, yeah, it won't be easy. Either game won't be easy. And, you know, it's not like we're on top form, is it? You know, we were good, decent today, but we've had some off performances as well. Yeah. So, yeah, I think I'll just take each game as it comes.
Yeah, that's a hackneyed phrase, but very very appropriate the way we are, because, you know, it's win-lose, you know. But I hope I'd sooner have – well, you don't want to draw. You don't want to go draw, because that's
– not really, no.
Nothing, really. I mean, it has been a good day today, because agent Matty Taylor, he banged in 2 goals against the Gas, who now find themselves nestling in the bottom four of League One. So Paul Tisdale, that was looking a good appointment. We are going to talk about the Mark. We are going to talk about the Mark Ashton interview. But I was intrigued today. I had my eye on what was going on up at the Stadium of Light, or it's known as the Stadium of something else by many people these days, because it was Wilbraham versus Lee Johnson. It would have been Steve Cottrell, and whilst he's still not over COVID, apparently he was controlling team selection. It finished Sunderland 1, Shrewsbury 0. So he, LJ, got the win at home that he needed. But I've got to share these with you. This is off the Sunderland's forum after the game today, and we've heard it all before. Well on top first half, then LJ tries to be clever by switching winners. As poor as we've been in the second half, he looks clueless to me. What a crock of shit. Seemed better suited to playing away from home. That's very mild, and I haven't even heard his interview yet. I mean, are we really bothered about what Lee Johnson is doing up in Sunderland?
Dave,
or is it just
Dave,
me?
Can I just say we aren't, but you are. You've got a bit of a fixation. you've got a bit of a fixation with him, mate, and you need to wobble your head a bit and stop it.
I'll tell you what.
Just provide a laugh, though, doesn't it?
No, I'll tell you what it is, right? Because Mel said to me today, she said, why do you got this thing about? And I said, look, I said, make no bones about it. I got two lovely daughters. And like most blokes, you want a boy and you want him to play football for Bristol City or something like that. Now, if I'd had a boy, he probably would have been a pianist and not interested in football at all. But I look at Lee Johnson, who only had the football career that he had because of his dad, right? And then he's gone on. And it's an envy thing. I don't know. You know, having your boy, I mean, you got daughters, Ian. I don't know. Having your kids playing, yeah, it'd be great. But then if they don't want to do it, you know, you are where you are, aren't you? Anyway, let's move on. That was my little thing about Lee Johnson. I will try not to have that obsession. Right. The big talking point was the fact that Gregor McGregor did, in the wake of, I think we smoked Mark Ashton out of his bunker, because he gave an extensive 8,000 word interview to Gregor McGregor.
You haven't counted them up one by one, have you?
No, that's what Gregor put on This Is Bristol. I mean, I'll I'll come to you first, Dave. I mean, Dave, today the performances on the pitch and the youngsters coming in and doing well, Viner, Backinson, Semenyo, and O'Leary, yeah, because that was four good performances for us. It was almost a little bit like a jail card for Mark Ashton because it deflected away from him. But you've looked at the article in detail.
I haven't actually. I haven't read it.
Haven't you?
No, I've only read a couple of bits.
You've read a few bits. But, I mean, he had to come out and say something, and he's on Jeff Twentyman on Monday night, isn't he? But, you know, what the little bits that you've read, what were your thoughts? Because it looks like Steve Lansdowne sanctioned FAM going for nothing rather than silly money.
I guess if we start off with the Famara thing, my general kind of thoughts on that are, I'm glad he's not holding us to ransom, and we're, you know, for a player who's, I guess, you know, he's one of our four strikers, let's just say that, but he's not the nailed-on starter, is he? He's not our star striker. Of late, he's played some decent games, and one might think, is that because he's in the shop window? But if we're offering him the best contract or one of the best contracts we've ever offered, I think that's a bit out of kilter with where we are in the financial world. And if it was me, I wouldn't be offering him the best contract that Bristol City have ever offered. I'd be looking at someone else potentially. So I'm glad he's not holding us to ransom. It'll be whatever it'll be. I thought in general, Mark Ashton's responses to Gregor's questions, from what I've read so far, seemed a pretty, accomplished response. I felt a bit sick afterwards because I really wanted it to be crap in a
positive
way.
Do you know what, Dave? I read it through, and I'm going to obviously come on to Mark and Ian. I read it through, and I thought, can't argue with any of it, really. He said a lot of sensible stuff. He did seem as though it wasn't a lot of the decisions. It's not him. You know, it was Dean wanted Joe. Didn't see a place for Joe Morrell. Dean didn't see a place for Sammy Sesmodic. So it's a, don't
or
look
Corey
at me.
Smith.
Or Corey Smith. Don't look at me.
Or Sammy Smodic either.
Yeah, that's what I said. And Sammy. Did I pronounce his name wrong? Did I?
Yeah.
What did I call him?
Sesmodic.
the Smodmeister.
Yeah. Right. Ian, I'll come to you next. You've read the article in full. Was it the usual corporate speak from MA or... you know, do we give him the benefit of the doubt, or was
there was a large element in it. The only thing I actually learnt out of it, to be honest, was that Williams is out training, because from what Dean Holden said the other week about don't know if we'll see Joe this season, I'd written him off for the season. So that was good news.
We spoke yesterday, Ian, didn't we, about that? And I said there was another interview from Holden maybe a week later that gave a bit more promise, but yeah, probably that one might have.
But also
one of his long interviews. So.
Yeah, I mean, at the same time, the feedback on Liam Walsh wasn't as good. You know, he's had a very serious injury. It's not something you can cure with an operation. It'll heal when it heals. So you can understand why there's no rush to get information out about him, because so we now know Williams might be back. We know that Pato and Steven Sessegnon should be back in full training first week in Feb, and Pato's possibly available, and so Steven Sessegnon for the Derby game. And Baker, we've had complete radio silence, but I understand, to coin a phrase, he's out on the grass. So, you know, let's hope. Because there's no doubt with four or five of those back in the team, four or five back in the team, we would have a stronger team, and it would give us a bit more edge, more strength in depth, a stronger bench, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
One thing I did look at before today, when you talk about playing a weakened team and all the rest of it, we had 24 million was the starting lineup. That's what we paid, because there's no Mawson in the squad. And the subs were 10.4.
Yeah.
So you had 35 million quid's worth to put that, the subs and the bench together. And when you consider we had a lot of out of contract players on there, like Martin in Rowe, and we also had a good few young lads who we haven't paid a button for, it's quite stark.
Yeah. No, that's true. I mean, Mark, you've read the article. Dave had said, and I agree with him, that, you know, everything that Ashton said, you know, it's easy to vilify him and point the finger at somebody, and he seemed to be in the spotlight over the last 10 days. But it was a decent interview, and I guess Ashton with Gregor McGregor is a bit like Anthony Joshua having a punch-up with you and me and then going on to play... who's that other bloke who's he's fighting soon? Yeah, because
Tyson
Jeff
Fury.
Tyson Fury. Yeah. So Jeff Twentyman might give Ashton a bit more of a tough questioning on Monday, or not? What do you think? And what do you think?
He usually does. I mean, I think it was very polished from Ashton. He got in his usual. He didn't say thank you to the Lansdowne family. He said Lansdowne's have been phenomenal, and talked about a training pitch. I think it was interesting what he said about Joe Morrell, because Dean said he wanted to move him on because he had his midfield sorted out. But I think that was when he still thought that Walsh and Williams would play, would start. And of course, before their protracted injuries. So I still wonder if he'd known that then, where he would have kept Joe Morrell, very possibly. But other than that, it didn't tell us too much.
No,
I think it was, but I mean, Ashton.
It was well timed. He needed to do it, and
yeah,
he did it. It was like hearing somebody convey. It was like hearing government speak or something like that. It said,
yeah, he's a very polished performer. He's somebody. I mean, if you look at his, I mean, he's done interviews with a few, you know, trade press. He was somebody who didn't make it as a player for West Brom. I think he was a goalkeeper, and yeah. So what he did was he threw himself into the management side. And learned him from top to bottom, and he's been around. And I think he has done interviews before where it's, you know, he's talked a lot of cliches, whether Gregor is just giving him, you know, he's taken those out, but I think he has spoken verbatim. To that interview was a lot easier read than some of the stuff we'd seen previously.
Yeah.
So fair play to him, I suppose. Yeah.
Dave, you haven't read the article in full, but it didn't really delve into injuries at all, other than him saying, you know, we analyse every area of the club. But one thing he did say, he said, we gave Dean two good coaches, but because of circumstances with COVID, we haven't been able to do much, 11 versus 11. And therefore, and he was almost excusing the fact that we haven't got the benefits out of Dowling and Simpson.
Yeah.
But from a training perspective, I would have thought you would be doing quite a lot of 11 versus 11 on any specialist coaching, would be in small groups. I mean, what's your view on that? It was almost like excusing that, you know, they didn't, maybe they've heard, he's been listening to what people have said that, well, what value are they giving Dean? But what do you think to that comment?
I think twofold. I think there's an element that says with the intense schedule that we've had, your actual time to spend on the training ground drilling systems and patterns of play and things like that is limited because you need to rest the players. So I would imagine, you know, if you think of a Saturday, then we go and play Tuesday. They'll get a day off tomorrow. They'll be in Monday. But the players that played will be on a real light session and they'll be taking the stiffness out of their legs and doing all that kind of stuff. And they probably won't get much more than an hour of everyone together. And then they've got to obviously prepare for the game. And then they'll be travelling up to Huddersfield. And so the actual time to spend drilling on the pitch, I don't think is there. And then, of course, the other bit is when you've got so many injuries, you actually haven't got enough players to do anything more. I was really surprised a few weeks ago when there was a bit of a kind of furore around Dean saying, oh, we had a really hard kind of internal match at the club. And I'm thinking, they'd have done really well with the injuries to actually get an 11-11. And I think it's one of those things that's kind of got taken a bit out of context. They might have played a bit more of an attack v defence kind of thing on a half pitch or something, you know. But I don't think they'd have been going around clattering each other. I think there's competitive training and there's competitive training, and I think we just have to be, you know, they're sensible people. They do know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Sorry, Mark.
Can I just ask, wasn't it a training game of 11-11 that caused the Williams injury, from what we understand, reading between the lines? I don't think it's ever been admitted, has it?
No, it hasn't. I can answer that. No, it wasn't. It wasn't a behind closed doors game against Cheltenham, as was rumoured.
It was before
the first training game, you know, a training session.
It was the first training session he ever did with the club.
Yeah. Oh, crikey.
There was originally a team sheet that was put, or you know, on social media that this was the two 11s that played against each other after the Cheltenham friendly that happened kind of around midday, and his name appeared in that. So I think most people thought he'd got injured in that, but then that's subsequently been that was kind of a bit of guesswork from someone. So you know, usual kind of thing, you get a bit of, you know, get the full facts, do you?
Yeah. No, and I think you have to. I mean, one question it wasn't asked is why have we had all these injuries? Why is it so many? Okay, every club has got one, two, possibly three players who get injuries. Every club you could line up and mention, I could probably say, but you even look at big clubs like Liverpool, and they've had a real bad time with injuries, particularly with centre backs. Okay, I get that, but they haven't got 12.
No, they're not hamstring tears, are they? Either, you know.
No, and if you exclude Brunt, who you know, fair play to him, tore his contract up. He couldn't play anymore. That would be 12. We've now got 11. Now, knowing that Williams is now going to be available this season, we've now got six out for the season. And five that are available, or sorry, six available to come back and five out for the season. That's how the 11's made up. But I'm wondering if at the moment the ones back for the season include Liam Walsh. And I'd really like to know if he's going to play this season. If he's not, just let us know and we can all move
on. And will he ever play for the club? Because he's out of contract, yeah? And,
yeah.
You know, and he's not played enough to justify a contract that in a post-COVID environment, because I put my money on him going back to Coventry. Yeah,
we triggered the additional year, didn't we, last year?
Yeah, but the point is, our Coventry, because everybody's post-COVID, it's not just Bristol City.
Well, this is it,
Our Coventry, I mean, it might be non-footballing reasons that makes him move. He might want to go back to Liverpool, he might have a girlfriend that lives in Coventry. I don't know what is, you know, I don't know, and I don't want to know what situation are, but I'd rather know with players. I said a year ago, Pham was going to run his contract down and he wasn't going to sign. And my annoyance isn't that he isn't signing the contract now, it's up to him. My annoyance is that a year ago, we didn't say to him, Pham, there's a contract. Honest mate, it's the best offer we can give you. You've got a month to consider it, come back to us. But we want that contract signed and we're going to have to list you. I do the same with every single player that's got a year left, because we can, you know, okay, we've got Steve Lansdowne. He's an incredibly wealthy man and he's pumped an awful lot of money into the football club. But even he must be thinking, well, hang on a minute. We're seriously, it's not just Zizou whose contract's running out. This is something else I've got against the interview. It's okay concentrating on Pham because he's our record signing. I get that. But how about all the others that are out of contract? There's none. Yeah.
No, but we talked about this in midweek, didn't we? That, you know, as you just reminded me, loads of clubs have got players out of contract. No, but loads of clubs have got players out of contract and all these scouts, never mind scouting offshore and what have you, we'll know who's going to be available, right? And the football finances, you know, it's like a great big monster coming up over the hill that the chickens are going to come home to roost on that once this season gets out of the way, because if people aren't, we haven't got bums on seats in stadium by August, you know, the way things are going, you know, some clubs are going to fall away, aren't we? I mean, look, the key thing is this, we are going to get some of the players coming back and, you know, they will add value to the side. And whilst we've been pretty mediocre in most of the matches, today was great, just like it was against Preston, to be fair. We put in a performance. I can remember when John Ward took over as manager back at the tail end of 96-97 season. He came in and won six out of the last seven, which got us into the playoffs. As long as we're that 5 or 6 points behind the playoffs mark, we've still got a very, very good chance, unless we're 5 or 6 points behind with 7 games to go or something like that. Is that how you're seeing things at the moment? You're usually the cup half full type of guy.
Yeah. I think there's a great chance that there's a chance for a number of teams to get sixth spot. I mean, Cardiff were falling away, and they've just replaced Neil Harris with somebody who's got 4 promotions and 2 championships, under his belt as a manager, and Mick McCarthy, who's a very safe pair of hands. So they want to still go for it. But yeah, City have got a good chance of any of in the top, finishing the top six. But we've got to keep creating chances and put them in the back of the net. And I think today was a great change, because in the second half, we had lots of chances. And the first half, it was same old story. First shot on target from a penalty after half an hour. But after that, and it's I think it comes back to confidence again. When we're playing on the front foot, and we
I agree.
We put our foot into the tackles, and Backinson was better and so much better in the second half. And Viner, and he can pass the ball as well. And I think that frees up the likes of Casey Palmer, because he needs two tacklers alongside him to be because he can't tackle very well.
No.
Though we did a couple on the wing, and then Wells. It'd be nice to see Wells start some games, because I think he's our best striker of the ball by far.
Well, he looked interested today as well. He didn't have that forlorn look on his face. I mean, Dave, your Mick McCarthy being named as manager over at Cardiff, probably supported by Terry Connor, who usually is.
Yes, Connor.
It's happened already, has it? Yeah, Terry Connor, he's over there. I mean, you look at McCarthy coming in there, and I think somebody put on OTIB today. You know, we look at a club like Cardiff. You know, in the last 10 years, they've had 2 promotions to the Premier League. They've been pretty short, and they didn't seem to mess about with that appointment. There was no 6 weeks or anything like that before they decided. Do you think that's a good appointment for Cardiff City, Mick McCarthy?
Yeah, I think I'd have loved him here at some point. I think he's a really good manager. I think he seems to have this kind of view that he's long ball because of the way he played with Republic of Ireland. But, you know, some of his size in the past, Millwall when he was there, some years ago, they were a really exciting side. Hard as nails as well. But, that kind of typifies Mick McCarthy as a bloke as well. I think he's a very good manager. He had a rough end at the end of his time at Ipswich, which probably has tainted his
time at Wolves as well, wasn't it, really? Because, he was messing around. But he's a bit old school, though, isn't he? Yes, you would say that. Do you agree with that, Ian? Mick McCarthy, old school, and time to move on from people of that ilk?
Well, so's Neil Warnock. And he's not doing a bad job at Pittsburgh. I mean, I think if you've got where I sit on managers, I don't think Lee Johnson should have got the job, because there was nothing on his CV that suggested he should get it. And I don't think Dean Holden for the same reason. Now, I know people will be saying, well, hang on a minute, you've got to start somewhere. And that's very true. But if you look at where the likes of Warnock and Mick McCarthy started, they didn't start in the Premier League and they didn't start in the Championship. I can remember Warnock at Plymouth, Notts County.
And that's where he started.
He's always done the work with unfashionable clubs. So they've both gone out and they've both learnt the job from the basement up. They haven't always got it right. And like all managers, they've been sacked. But I know that. So that's where I was coming from when I talked about a track record.
Yeah.
And somebody somebody like Warnock or Mick McCarthy, even Paul Cook, had a track record of winning a championship and winning championships and getting promoted.
I said to you today, Ian, when we were chatting lunchtime, I said Paul Cook is sort of like a modern day Gary Johnson, a slight upgrade on Gary, because Gary was non-league into bottom of the league, but Paul Cook's done it, and I'm surprised he's not got fixed up with anybody just yet. But one manager who seems to be under real pressure, and he was trending on Twitter just after the matches, and that's the one that was everybody's shoo-in back in the summer, and that's Chris Hughton at Nottingham Forest. Now, Dave, I don't know how much you probably don't follow Forest per se, but, he's is that a club that's in disarray, or is it that Hughton's got done there and doesn't seem to be working his magic one iota. They lost 5-1 today. I think they might have won their previous game, but Hughton's proven to be not all that. Would you agree with that?
I think as a club, they're not the basket case Forest of 5 to 7, 8 years ago, which were real trouble. I think they've
that's
recovered.
That was when the Greek was running it, wasn't it? Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, and I'm not quite sure the ownership there now. So they're not a mess like they were then. But the other thing is they appointed Hughton into the season. You know, I think he might have been. I think he brought in one player on like day two in the job, and that guy's now gone back out on loan somewhere. So you would imagine that it was already a done deal and it was just being announced as Lamucci got sacked and Hughton come in. And I don't think you can really compare to it. I'm sure Forest fans would have and probably City fans would have expected him to have done better than what he has so far. But taking over someone else's team that was, you know, built over a 15-month period and are probably going to play very differently. So I think you just have to wait. You know, I guess Forest fans will be hoping that they survive the drop this season and then he gets a summer to start to put his plans into place.
Yeah, so we hope so. Unless somebody pulls it, but, you know, football people live on a knife edge. You know, it might get so bad that somebody does pull the trigger. I mean, one manager who could go for the high jump because they're falling like a stone is Mark Warburton. Now, he's a manager that made his name really at Brentford, which got him the Rangers job. I mean, Ian, Mark Warburton, you know, he's another name that we might have wanted here had he been available. What are your thoughts on him? And QPR, they're in the deep shit at the moment, aren't they?
Yeah, I think he's got a difficult job to do because he's at a club that haven't got any money or they're not prepared to spend any money. And there's only so much you can do. And what you have to say about QPR is they have brought through some excellent young players like the lad Eze that went to Palace. And they've got the right winger that should have equalised against us up there, but he scuffed it wide when he should have just smashed it with his right foot. But I like the way his sides play. I think he's an attacking manager, but I don't think if you look at the defensive side of the game, QPR anything much. The other thing you don't know in the FA Cup is how strong the sides are they put out. I mean, we beat Millwall today. They made 8 changes. We made 6. So you can't really tell. Don't get me wrong, I'm really glad we won and all the rest of it, because if nothing else, we need the money. It's the league games where you're going to see people's first 11, and that's why I think Dean will stick to the same formation, the same shape, same up front. But I think he'll make 3 changes when we play Huddersfield on Tuesday night.
Well, that's there to be seen and looked forward to, really, isn't it? Yeah, because that's the next game that's coming up when we'll be doing a live pod. Well, the good thing about tonight is that I don't think we've had any sound problems at all, because in Headhunter's Castle, I've actually done it in a different room, and I'm about 3 feet from the router. So
Just scored, yeah.
They're 1-0. Is it on the VAR?
Yeah, I don't know. Long throwing.
Are you joking?
Scrambling the box, he scored.
No.
Sorry.
Oh, no.
So they won it up?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, somebody just joined us and he said, "I'm Ali from Iran. Where are you?" So we do have an international audience here. But there we go. What was I going to say? Yeah, so I think we're pretty much done for this evening. I'd just like to say, you know, apologies for sound quality in the past. Yeah. Tomo, he came up with a couple of ideas for features that we're going to mention. And one of them, I'll email the lads, is the last 15 managers at Bristol City, have they been the cheap option, the best available at the time, or pushing the boat out? So we're going to go on and do that. We've had a few people say, why don't you do this on Zoom? And I looked up today that you can do Zoom and live streaming on a YouTube channel, but there's a 20-second delay. And as I've said to a number of people on this, I get more of a buzz doing it live. But what I'm thinking of doing is actually getting a Forever Bristol City Zoom channel. Yeah, and I don't mind paying a subscription for it. No, I'm not looking for a sponsor. So that we could do it on Zoom and have up to 100 people in the room. I mean, we've got just over 40 today. I don't think we'll ever get to 100. But if people want to send messages to me at Headhunter on OTIB, or most people know how to get hold of one of us, whether you would watch stroke listen to this on Zoom rather than the app. And then, because one of the comments raised in our direction is that, you know, I tend to cut over people, and is that because we can't see each other and that type of thing? So this is really going out to the listeners. I mean, I think Dave, me and Ian have talked about trying different things, but when they said Zoom live streaming on YouTube, there's 20 second delay. I think that defeats the object, because Dave and mainly Dave, you're doing great interaction with the people that are asking questions on the text as we're going. and Dave is participating as he does, because Ali in Iran has asked what your idea about Iranian government. Dave said back, what league do they play in? But there we go. So
yeah, for God's sake, don't answer that. They'll find out where you live, that'll be the finish of you.
I'm not saying anything, actually. I'm not going to say anything, because I could get myself into trouble with one of my comments. But I'm not going to do that. Guys, look, it's been a good little pod. Much better when I know that the sound's not going, because I feel a bit more relaxed doing it as well. Hopefully we'll all be back. Well, hopefully I'll be back Tuesday. Hopefully you three guys will as well, when we'll be hopefully celebrating a home win. Dave, Mark, Ian, thanks for your contribution. And
thank you very much.
Enjoy the rest of your weekend. It was a lovely sunny day.
I'm off for a nice Cadbury's hot chocolate. Obviously, other types of hot chocolate are available if anybody's listening.
Oh, well, you're having hot chocolate. I'll ask you then, Ian. What's your what are you doing immediately after this podcast?
I'm having a king prawn curry.
There we go. And Dave, what are you doing immediately after this podcast?
I'm going to wait for Mrs. F to cook me a chicken curry.
There you go.
And Ali from Iran, what will you be eating at this time of the day?
I'm sure he'll be back. Ali, if you're listening, yeah, it's welcome to the world of Bristol City. But guys, thanks for getting...
Just before we do go, I think on the OSIB forum, we've been accused of being a really, really grumpy and dour. And I think today we've not been that. So if anyone's listening and want to post on the OSIB Facebook forum, tell us whether you thought we were happier tonight.
I think we love
you all.
and I think the major problem is when they made listening mandatory. I think we need to put a stop to that, and that's my way of saying it. If you don't like it, you know, it's like these people who said, I watched that programme.
That's like Mary Whitehouse back in the 70s, isn't it? With putting on
National Viewers and Listeners Association.
I watched that programme for 3 hours and I was disgusted. Well, switch the bloody thing off then. There's a button, just press it. There's about a million channels on the television you can watch. You can watch football 24/7 if you like it that much.
Yeah. So I tell you what I noticed, of course, with all these live games that the three of you, the amount of swearing that goes on is brilliant, isn't it? You can just hear it. It's in Dolby Stereo swearing this season. And when they have the Sky broadcast, I'd like to apologise for what you just heard there.
I think a Norwich
coach jumped up. I think there was a challenge on by the dugout, and a Norwich coach.
I think what we should What we should do at the end of it is have a little rider that comes on saying that if you've been affected by this programme, please dial 0800 123 456 or something like that. Yeah, I think that's probably the way ahead.
They'll come straight through to me and I'll deal with them.
Yeah, you'll deal with it. I'm going to watch.
How's Beyonce going to get through then?
I'm going to watch another three editions of Billions. Yeah, and all I could say is if Steve Lansdowne was like Bobby Axelrod, we'd be in Europe by now. Have a great evening, everybody, and thanks for listening.
Cheers. Have a good one, everyone.
Bye.
Take care.
Good night.
Good night, and God bless.